The Heart of Rural America is brought to you by the new auction platform, Bid on Beef. We invite you to buy beef the cowboy way through an honest bidding process where you have the power to pick the ranch, pick the cut, and pick the price. You are in the driver's seat, and we are excited to ship beef directly to your door. Use code WELCOME10 for your first $10 to shop when you register to bid at bidonbeef.com. Welcome to the Heart of Rural America podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Radke, an American cattle rancher and motivational speaker, raising my kids and writing children's books in South Dakota. There's a David and Goliath story unfolding in agriculture today. And I don't know about you, but my money is on the underdog, the hardworking folks who value faith, family, freedom, and their farming communities. This show will highlight the untold stories of these resilient and determined families who I have the great pleasure of meeting in my travels across this nation as an agricultural speaker. It is my hope that their stories will remind us to live with great courage because we are not alone in this fight to keep producers on the land and meat, dairy, and eggs on the dinner table. Now let's hit the dusty trail together as we uncover the heart of rural America.
Welcome to your show. Here's my mom, Amanda Radke.
Hey everyone, it's Amanda Radke back for another episode of the Heart of Rural America podcast, the show where we highlight great people doing inspiring things in their rural communities to make agriculture and this country stronger. Today, I have the great pleasure of welcoming former Congressman Steve King to the show. He hails from the great state of Iowa. He is a founding board member of the Free Soil Foundation. And really, I've gotten to know Steve working on this eminent domain issue as it relates to carbon sequestration pipelines. So Congressman King is here to give us all the skinny on the big, beautiful bill and what's in it, what's not, and what we need to know in regards to if our private property rights are once again under attack and how we can fight back. So Congressman, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on, Amanda. And you said the great state of Iowa, but I think South Dakota set the pace in the last couple of years. We look to you to have the energy out there, and we've been following that. We've been picking up on it and building on that energy. So my thanks to South Dakota to start this out.
Well, I'm sure our landowners will appreciate that. And really, it's become a team effort of great people in multiple states kind of keeping in touch and communicating and seeing, okay, what's happening? What's boots on the ground? How can we support each other? And so I was actually just in Iowa, in Allison, Iowa, here over the weekend, and there were carbon sequestration pipeline signs and trucks everywhere. I found one most notable was there was a stop CO2 pipelines, a big semi truck painted, and then across the road was the Poet plant. And I made a few phone calls, called our friend Doyle, and asked him, like, where am I? Who's here? And got to connect with one of the fighters, Kim there. That was her truck. Mm-hmm. So I got to make that connection while I was down in Iowa. So it seems to be, I can't go anywhere without thinking about this battle because it has been kind of life altering. So I guess just to get started, can you tell us a little bit, maybe just introduce yourself to the listeners here, your time in Congress and, you know, kind of what fueled you during your time serving this great country?
Well, I'll skip back a ways. I grew up in a law enforcement family and had the Constitution drilled into my head on a regular basis and the rule of law. I started a construction company back in 1975 with an old beaten up bulldozer and 100% loan from a Democrat banker. And today, the second generation is running that company and it's grown. It's doing fine. But I was frustrated because my state senator did not have the set of values necessary to be making decisions on life and death, let alone prosperity. And so I ran for the Iowa Senate. And then 6 years later, there was an open seat in Congress. And when the new redistricting map came out, I looked at that map and in 10 seconds, I decided I'm going to run for Congress because if it was ever going to happen in my lifetime. That was the time. There was only going to be one chance and I didn't want to fail on being proactive. So I went to Congress and spent 18 years there, Ag Committee, Judiciary Committee, and Small Business Committee. I also chaired the Constitution Committee, and that's a subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee. And that's actually been the love of my life, has been the Judiciary Committee, the intense issues there. It's the most polarized committee on the Hill. The hardcore leftists come out of the inner cities, and they just verbally beat up on we Christian conservatives that sit on the other side of that dais. So that's been my background. I brought a number of different bills in. English is the official language is one. I build a wall on the floor of the House of Representatives with a model that we put together in my office just to show them this is not hard. I'm a construction company. I can build a wall. And so that's a number of those things. I've been strong on border security, on pro-life, on marriage being between a man and a woman. The list of these values that are the foundation of our American Republic and American exceptionalism.
Wonderful. Well, so you find yourself in quite a battle on private property rights here in the last several years. I guess what's kind of got everybody's attention right now is the big, beautiful bill. And what is going on there? There was three things of note that in particular we were all watching. I guess I just kind of want to open it up to you. What was the language in this bill that kind of had those of us that are following this particular issue, you know, so on edge? And maybe just walk us through what happened on the House side of things as this went through the floor.
Well, this language was, it was slipped into the bill in the committee mark, the base bill that went before the committee, which meant the chairman either was aware of it or his staff duped him on it. But when I read the language in the bill that you've mentioned, I boiled it down and put out a statement. I don't know if I can give it exactly a quote to it, but it would be this, that if you're willing to write a $10 million check to the federal government, they will expedite a federal permit that trumps and every local and state regulation that might be impeded in the way. Say if you're Bruce Rastetter in Summit and you want to build, or Harold Hamm, for example, and you want to build a CO2 pipeline or any other kind of pipeline, wherever you want to send that pipeline, you would have eminent domain to do so for a $10 million check. They could bulldoze their way through any section of America under that language. When I read it, it was just outrageous. And whatever hair I had left was on fire. And
it was pay to play, right? And so
yes, it was.
I know like our South Dakota Public Utilities Commission always prides itself on, we don't want to be like a fast track. We want to do our due diligence, take the time to understand the proposals of these projects. And all of a sudden it's like, well, if you have a $10 million check, you can bypass all that and get your project in the ground just as quick as possible with no input really from the locals, the community, the general public.
None of that, just to bypass all state laws, all county ordinances, and all of utilities commissions that exist anywhere in America, but all be bypassed, but all be kicked aside. They wouldn't have a function any longer if somebody had a $10 million check. Only the pikers with $9 million or less would have to go through that process of getting it approved locally. And what a thing to property rights that it kicks aside the public use requirement. And we should, when we talk about property rights, we should always go to the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution, which says, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. And I pointed this out in publicly, and that is that there's no mention in there about private companies taking private property with or without just compensation, because it was beyond the comprehension of the framers of our Constitution that they would ever be private taking private. It would only be government that could confiscate property. So the unspoken is, that's verboten big time, because it couldn't even be thought about back in 1787. But so public use, and then there was a Kelo decision in 2006, I believe it was, where the Supreme Court on a split decision added two words to the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. I'll say de facto added, because it should not have ever happened. But so it would read now, in effect, nor shall private property be taken for public use or public purpose, that's in air quotes, without just compensation. And that's opened up a lot of things now where they're trampling on our property rights. And one day that decision will be reversed, I believe. And those are the words of Justice Scalia within a week of this decision coming down. He said, it is an erroneous decision and it will be reversed one day.
I'm so glad you brought up the Kelo discussion. And for our listeners, if you want to start learning about this, if this is the first time you've heard about this case, there's actually a movie on Amazon Prime called Little Pink House. I would encourage you to go watch that. I'm sure Hollywood did its thing with it. But the basis of it is a private company, with the help of the government, using phrases like economic development, seized this woman's house to build something. And I just saw in the news the other day, and we have a new pope from America. And the city government, using eminent domain, has taken control of the pope's childhood home with a family living in it. So it's just like, if the government decides, yes, I can use this for the greater good, they can seize your property. Isn't that quite a discussion? So yes, I would agree with you. This does need to be challenged. And we do need to really ask ourselves, what does private property ownership really mean in this country? Does it mean anything at all anymore?
My, I didn't know that they had confiscated the Pope's childhood home. Boy, when you say that, the image comes to mind, though, of the parking lot at the health center, that big hospital in Bismarck, North Dakota. There's a white frame farmhouse right in the middle of that parking lot. And that's a monument to property rights. I thought it was a little old lady. Somebody told me it was a little old man, but he said, I live here. This is my home and I'm not giving it up. And they built the parking lot around him and a little retaining wall about 4 feet high. He's got a lot of company around every day, but he's got his house and his home. And that's how it should be. That was how it was envisioned.
Right.
So this battle is a battle about a number of things, this CO2 pipeline. But we should go through the sequence of this, which you asked me about.
Yeah.
And I didn't answer your question.
I'm totally on a greater discussion thing of the whole general premise of it, which I think we could probably talk about for hours.
At Radke Land and Cattle, we proudly use Advanced Ag Products BioReg Plus. With its proprietary coating technology for slow release of essential oils in the lower GI tract, BioReg Plus products are designed and proven to help beef producers with overall performance, feed intake, gut integrity, nutritional support, immunity, fertility, and reproductive health. With the rising cost of beef cattle production today, having optimal performance and minimizing health challenges in every head counts. Learn more at bioreg.com and tell them Amanda sent you.
The Heart of Rural America is presented to you by CK6 Consulting Services. I have the great pleasure of working alongside the CK6 team, including Chris Earle, Wes Tiemann, and Cody Fleeman, and it's an honor to assist cattle producers as they strive to meet their business goals. With a purebred Angus specialization, we have a full slate of auction sales coming up as we work to maximize price discovery and capture true value for our clients and customers. Plus, let us help you identify your next herd sire for the upcoming breeding season. At CK6 Source, you'll find great customer service, fast shipping, and a focus on leading Angus genetics. Learn more about what we do at ck6consulting.com and ck6source.com. We would love to assist you any way we can. God bless.
But yes, the big, beautiful bill. What do people need to know? Okay. So we talked about the $10 million fast track. What was the next point?
Well, the function of how this actually happened, I think, is important for people to understand, because there's still questions about whether the language is in the bill or whether it'll sneak back in the bill. So I had expected that Marionette Miller Meeks, a congresswoman from Eastern Iowa, and a person who I've called a personal friend for a long time, but she's on Bruce Rastetter's side of this argument, and she's been vocal about it. She's on that committee, the Energy and Commerce Committee. And so when I saw the language in the base bill, I presumed that she had gone to the chairman and made sure that that language was written into the base bill. I'm not certain at this point, but I've been disabused of that by her and maybe a few others. So I have to turn my attention to Doug Burgum. And he sits there in the cabinet. We know that he has been looking for a way to federalize this CO2 pipeline and kick aside our constitutional rights to property. He's been the most voracious appetite for consuming our property rights of anybody I know of in the last few years anyway. So I expect it was Burgum and Harold Hamm and their lawyers that cooked up this idea of, gee, we got stalled in South Dakota. We're getting stalled in Iowa. So we have to do something to federalize this. And I know that there was a pattern for it. And I've read through all the language. And there was a bill, it was an appropriations bill also, back in 1974, I believe it was, to open up the Alaska pipeline. They brought legislation that said, this is a national emergency, so we're going to bulldoze our way through from what's milepost zero up at Prudhoe Bay and down to Valdez, Alaska. So they opened that up, and they did use eminent domain, but there wasn't much private property. They did use eminent domain to do that. So that's the pattern. And they laid this thing out in a stark way. Every pipeline. Oh, another piece of language is a pipeline. Now, there used to be definitions like crude oil and natural gas and hydrous, whatever. They changed the definition to be liquid or a gas, a pipeline that processes and moves either liquid or gas. So I ask, well, what goes through a pipeline that's not a liquid or a gas? And I can't come up with anything, but I can think of some things like, heavy water or Fukushima water might go through a pipeline. They enable that if that legislation. So to the point, they wrote it into the base bill. A lot of us raised a great big ruckus. A lot of people in South Dakota made their voices heard, too. And as the pressure came and the bill moved through the process and it went to the budget committee, then it was voted down on the budget committee. Then it was brought back to the budget committee on a motion to reconsider. And whether it was before that committee or on the way to the rules committee, they struck that language out. And so it was not voted on, even, well, it may have been voted on the Rules Committee, but I can't see the minutes that say that. So what you see is when you go on the Rules Committee's website to track the legislation, there is one place there where it says additions and deletions of the bill. And they've got the additions in green, I believe it is, and with underline, and those deletions are in red with strike-throughs. And that whole section of the bill, 41006, was taken out. It was several pages, but I boiled it down to just a simple statement, I guess. So that it got killed before it went to the Rules Committee or at the Rules Committee, but it did not go to the floor for a vote, which disappoints me because I really wanted to know how some of these people voted on this bill, like Randy Feenstra, Dusty Johnson. You can go on across the upper Midwest congressmen who have been mum on our property rights for too long.
Isn't that unfortunate, the lack of transparency? That, I mean, I had hundreds of texts after that vote. Like, people were certain it was in. The language was still in. People were certain it was out. And there was so much misinformation out there and everybody's wanting to get the scoop. And I guess that's maybe just a reminder. I think, you know, I was in constant contact with you because I knew you'd have background knowledge of how this even goes in Washington, D.C. But I think just as a side note, there is this propensity for the scoop to be revealed on social media just as quick as possible. And if there's one thing I've learned over the years, it's take a deep breath, take a step back and give it a day or two. And oftentimes the truth becomes a lot clearer. So I appreciate everybody paying attention to it, though. And that's the thing. What was also evident to me is our landowner movement is just growing because people are on top of this. They are paying attention. And I imagine the phones are kind of ringing off the hook in DC coming from folks like our friends in Iowa and South Dakota. I think they've been busy. So that's good to see. It's good to see the engagement.
There's a reason for the confusion, too. And I had to make a phone call. Once I went through the internet and I could see that it had been taken out, and that was real clear off the rules website. There's also, if you go to congress.com, on that website, that bill was printed on there with the language in it, with that section 4106 in it. And so that caused a lot of confusion, and people out here couldn't understand how it is that the website wouldn't have been updated immediately. And I really couldn't either. When I saw that, am I wrong? That's possible, you know. And so I made a phone call out there to one of my wisest friends, a Harvard-educated, brilliant conservative. And she said, don't say Harvard. It's got a bad name these days. She said, no, sometimes it takes them a full week to update that language on congress.com after it comes out of rules. So the Rules Committee is the current one.
Sure. Okay. And that was confusing because there was different dated versions. And I guess speak briefly too, because all of this happened in the cloak of darkness in the middle of the night. Talk a little bit about how did watching that feel different than your time in Congress?
Well, boy, this was a fast track for sure. They've been working on this for a long time. And they had assignments for a number of the committees that did their component of the subject matter of the One Big Beautiful Bill. And then they brought those back to the budget committee. Once they passed out of the individual committees, they brought it back to the budget committee where they put it together, debated it, voted it. Well, then they did an all-night markup on the Energy and Commerce Committee. At least they had said they were going to do that, and they were at it in the morning. So all-night markups in some of the committees, probably not all of them. And then they went to the Rules Committee with the One Big Beautiful Bill after it came out of budget and gabbled in at 11:30 at night. And then they rolled through the night and they suspended the rules in a couple of different ways. One of them was there's a rule in the House that says that you can't put policy on appropriation bill, but they routinely suspend that at the Rules Committee, and they surely did with this bill. It's full of all kinds of policy. And then there's also to fast track it so that there would be a vote on the rule and then turn around and essentially immediately a vote on the bill, which they allowed for 2 hours of debate on the One Big Beautiful Bill, 2 hours of debate for 435 people divided equally between the majority and the minority party. That was as fast track as it gets. And it was like they set a deadline and we're going to get this done regardless of how fast we have to trample over everybody. But they did work hard on it, too, and there's good stuff in it. I have to say that. But 45Q should have been taken out, and it wasn't.
So there was one slight change to the 45Q, correct, that you were telling me about on the Chinese connections?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So any CO2 pipeline company has 2 years to, I'll say, divest themselves of their foreign investors. Foreign investors in blanket foreign investors. And so I don't know, there must have been enough noise made about that from some members of Congress that they decided to do that. Well, that would put Bruce Raster and some in a bit of a bind. Well, they've got a direct foreign investor. It's called SKENS, South Korea. When I looked at them, this is now maybe 2.5 years ago, they had, it was reported at least, that 45% of their labor force, it's a huge company, a global company, but 45% of their labor force were working on their operations in Red China. And so I call that Chinese. They have been divesting themselves of that. I don't know what that percentage is today. About it, they're clearly a foreign company, a South Korean company doing business in China. Then another investor, TPG Rise, is an investment firm that was formed just a few years ago. And it was formed with Henry Paulson at the head. Henry Paulson, former U.S. Secretary of the Treasury under George W. Bush, whom I got to know him. I don't know if I really knew him, but I worked with him face to face and nose to nose for a while when the economy was collapsing and he wanted $50 billion from us without any questions asked. But he's China-centric. He's been to China over 70 times. And, he's set up IPOs for Chinese companies. Well, they set up this investment firm. When I looked at it, we have Silk Road money in there. Silk Road is just Red China advocacy money right out of the Chinese Communist Party. And then I look a little further and it's Smithfield. Well, Smithfield up until a couple of months ago was 100% Chinese owned and still hugely Chinese owned. So then I looked at the rest of it. There were 20 companies altogether that formed TPG Rise, a $300 million investor in Summit. And of those 20 companies, you would recognize some of them. Every single one has operations in China. So yes, there's much foreign interest in that. I wrote an article that's on our website, freesoilfoundation.com, about Bruce Rastetter's Chinese money connections. And it's all taken from open sources. In fact, I just went to their website and where they bragged about their investors, I just went and investigated their investors. And that's what I came up with. There must be others I don't know about them in.
You guys know, as a beef girl, I take grilling very seriously around here. And I've been using Redmond Real Salt for over a decade to season my steaks and burgers. It's unrefined, ancient sea salt, exactly as nature made it. It contains 60 plus naturally occurring trace minerals, and it truly brings out the best of the beef we raise at home on the ranch. This American family-owned business also focuses on livestock products. And at Radke Land and Cattle, we are proud to use the beneficial Redmond Real Salt minerals to get back to the basics and help our cattle improve fertility, immunity, and feed efficiency. It's natural, simple, and effective for people and livestock. Discover more at redmondagriculture.com and redmondlife.com and use code RADKEY to save. Or contact a local dealer and mention my name for a special discount. Working cattle can be stressful at times, but the job is made so much easier with equipment that is safe, strong, and simply designed. I highly recommend Real Tough Livestock Equipment for all your working facility needs. We just installed the Deluxe Chute at Radke Land and Cattle, and it has been an absolute game changer as we run cows through our chute during AI season. It's durable and easy to use, and it's made to last a lifetime. Real Tough offers a wide range of products, including calving barns, panels, loading chutes, tubs, alleys, and portable working systems. Manufactured in the U.S. of A., Real Tough is family-owned and operated. Their commitment to helping farm and ranch families truly exemplifies what this show is all about. Learn more at realtough.com, that's T-U-F-F, and be sure to tell them Amanda sent you to receive an extra bonus with your order. Let's get you some iconic green Real Tough equipment headed your way. I promise you're going to love it.
You are such a wealth of knowledge. I feel like there's so many questions I want to ask. And I guess I can say, you know, this show is going to air Wednesday, May 28th. And a week from today, I can tell you from the South Dakota Coalition, we just finalized, we are headed out next week to go talk to Senate. So as the big, beautiful bill moves that direction, we are wanting to put a lot of pressure on. So I can confirm that I have Speaker of the House, John Hansen, Speaker Pro Tem, Carla Lems, of course, who are going to be our next governor and lieutenant governor in the state of South Dakota, because they are in the fight, fighting for the people of South Dakota. They are confirmed on the trip. We also have former Speaker of the House, Spencer Gosch, slated to go. We have Senator Mark Lopke, of course, who carried HB 1052 to eliminate eminent domain for CO2 pipelines in South Dakota, coming on the trip as well. And then we have the great Representative Liz May and myself going. And so we're planning that trip. We are going to try to be a visible presence in Washington, D.C. But Steve, I asked the crew last night, okay, I said, I'm going to be on the phone with Steve in the morning. have some questions for you. So the first question I have from you is, how likely do you think Trump could issue an executive order and override even the congressional process on this particular issue?
Ooh, you know, that's an open question right now. I just looked this morning and I actually texted it off to Carla. I haven't studied it very much. I was going to get to it. There's an executive order already out there about a national energy emergency. That executive order does address eminent domain. I have not studied it to the point of what it all it affects. I just got it last night. I read it quickly and then just sent it to Carla this morning. So kind of talking without knowing on that, but just what I read through there quickly on it tells me that that's certainly a possibility with this president. And if they hand over eminent domain to companies for private gain, whether it comes from the president, whether it comes from an act of Congress, or whether it comes from a court, there's going to be holy thunder to pay. The people out here in the upper Midwest, we are steeped in property rights from a long time back, 5-6 generations property rights. And we all grew up with this idea that if you buy a house or a farm and you can pay the mortgage on it and you can pay the taxes, you get to keep it and do with it what you choose to do with it. This would wipe out the property rights in America, which is a thunderous thing to do to a country that's built upon property rights. So I don't know if they understand the reaction that would happen. But it would be a serious, serious action. And hopefully that can be conveyed to the president. And we need some other people in the cabinet that'll push back against Burgum and Kristi Noem and Chris Wright. I don't know where he stands on property rights, but he's essentially an advocate for fracking and they want the CO2 for that. On the other side of that table in the cabinet is Bobby Kennedy Jr. He's with us completely on the property rights piece of this thing and the boondoggle of the CO2 pipeline. But Trump has told him, stay in your lane. You've got a lot to do, Bobby, which probably is not bad advice. But we need somebody speaking up at that cabinet table. And whatever J.D. Vance thinks about it, he's got to look at President Trump before he can open his mouth on this topic. So I'm concerned. And the more noise you can make out there, the more freedom you're going to protect for all the rest of us, Amanda.
I would agree. I see some rhinos have made some comments online that, oh, it's going to be Radke against Trump, to which my message is, you know, Trump ran on, I'm against the Green New Deal. I'm for lower, limited, smaller government. And like, he's for the people. And so if he becomes counter to that, where he's literally putting, you know, the country over the individual that built this country, well, then, yeah, we probably have a problem. But I know Trump is a businessman, and the same message to Trump is what I would give when I went to Pierre to advocate for 1052, which is we're not against business, we're not against pipelines, we're not against development, but we certainly don't feel like the government should be funding the Green New Deal, and we certainly believe in good business, meaning the landowner deserves to be at the table to be able to say, yes, I want to participate in this project, or no, thank you, I want to opt out, I have different plans for my land, and if we deviate from that, yeah, I think Donald Trump and the White House will be hearing from the people of South Dakota and Iowa and North Dakota who feel strongly that there's some things that just aren't for sale, period. So that's, I know, probably like a long shot, but maybe a little bit more closer to the big, beautiful bill. Another question that I got last night from our crew was, does federal preemption have a pathway to being reintroduced in the Senate? And what would that process look like? Mm-hmm. Meaning, are we out of the woodworks on the eminent domain piece, or could they sneak it back in?
As determined as they seem to be out there, and let's put most of the onus on Doug Burgum as the driving force, at least until we find out otherwise. And he's a smart man, and he's got people around him. He's got team, he's got staff, he's got a cabinet to communicate with and a president. So whether they can come up with something else in the Senate and push it that way, I would not put that past them, but there's not many senators that are for this that'll come out publicly and say so. And they also have a rule in the Senate called the Byrd Rule. And it's essentially a commandment that says thou shalt not put policy into an appropriations bill. And they scour it much more closely than in the House. The House just waives the rule. And in the Senate, they actually apply the rule. And so it was addressed to me in this way. I'll say one of the smart people on my Wednesday think tank, they apply the rule in the Senate really strictly. And it was just embedded this way. Even if Chuck Grassley went and talked to the parliamentarian or publicly challenged the parliamentarian on the floor of the Senate, that would not be enough to change the Byrd Rule and get that bumped out of the way. But I think that, you know, that doesn't mean they're not going to bring it back in some form of statute otherwise. So I'd say weigh in on the Senate, make sure that they are the bulwark right now. I mean, we could have lost that thing in the House and seen it go right through the Senate. So your voices matter. And I know you were instantly on this, Amanda, and you were zeroing in on the task at hand. And there are people across the country doing the same thing, and it made a difference.
Well, and so is it like, you know, procedurally in South Dakota, if there becomes a change then in the Senate, it's got to go back to the House for approval? Is that the case here or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Senate will change this bill a lot of different ways. And I've heard them be said right to them, just take this bill and send it to the president with this perfectly balanced. I've heard that so many times in the legislature. We all work together, like five of us back in the back room. Now we have the perfect bill, so don't try to improve on it. We have it already perfect, so just vote for it, dummy. And that's the message they're sending over to the Senate, minus the dummy part. The Senate will take it, though. They will make their amendments to it. They certainly will. It'll go back to the House, but it's awfully hard to do additions in the House when it comes back. Instead, the House will have to deliberate. There'll be a conference committee, and then the conference report will be hammered out in conference, and then the conferees will sign that conference report, and then that's a strong recommendation to both chambers to pass it. But with conference committee, people are also, I'll say, disillusioned on what a conference committee is. When you're on the conference committee, you go into a room with the big square seating, diplomatic seating, so everybody can look at everybody else. Then you introduce yourself around the table, and okay, thanks. They gavel out, and then the respective chairman and their committee staff hammer out all the conference. Then they hand you a report that says, sign this conference report. There isn't even a second meeting. The conferees are just there to ratify the decisions of the chair and the staff.
So would it be fair, if I'm asking folks at home to get involved and they're wanting to vocalize a message to the Senate, put some pressure on, like, we don't want eminent domain for carbon pipelines. We don't want pay to play. And finally, we want to eliminate that 45Q tax incentive. I wanted to share this numbers here on the 45Q, but with the currently proposed carbon dioxide projects, the 45Q incentive could cost U.S. taxpayers over $800 billion over the next 12 years. There is proposed legislation that could increase the $85 per ton credit to $250 a ton, an increase of 3x. It then could cost taxpayers $2.4 trillion, according to my estimations, over the next 12 years. So are we heading for a financial cliff if the 45Q is allowed to stay in place? And I think maybe that's the message. It has nothing to do with the Green New Deal. It has everything to do with, we are massively in debt as a country, and this is quite the expenditure for something quite silly. I guess, what are your thoughts on that, Steve?
Well, we are headed for a fiscal cliff with or without the 45Q, which is what has brought about this one big, beautiful bill, that the fiscal cliff that we're headed for, that Elon Musk has been in the forefront of this. Let's cut $2 trillion out of the budget. That was a breathtaking number when he first said that. Now they're talking about putting $2 trillion of expenditures into the budget for a boondoggle. There was only one person that fought Obamacare as hard as I did, and that was Michelle Bachmann. She ran for president on it. I didn't do that part, but I did everything else and then some. But because I could see what would happen is, once you get this started, once the camel gets his nose under the tent, then it just grows and grows and grows, and it consumes your freedom. They told us, you can keep your doctor, you can keep your health insurance policy, your premiums will go down, not up. Your premiums went, what are they, triple, four times now what they were then, something like that? And who has their doctor? Their doctors had to sack up their bats and go home or join a big group. So you can't even go see your doctor anymore. All those things happened that we predicted would happen, and much more, because once they got started, it just grew. Well, this is that same thing. What's coming at us is 2,500 miles of CO2 pipeline across, five states. And it was the hugest project ever conceived, that by their words. But there is reported somewhere between 65 and 95,000 miles of CO2 pipeline that they want to build across this country, almost all of it stimulated by the 45Q. So in the short-term funding of this thing, you multiply this thing out, it gets to be where there are no property rights in front of pipelines anywhere in this country. And it'd be, you know, if you're running a company, I don't know what the percentage of our GDP is that would be consumed by this huge boondoggle, but if you're running a company and they instantly, say, raise your taxes by 25%, how many people go broke if the government takes one out of every $4? Now, I don't know that that's the ratio here. We're taking our gross domestic product and burying it in North Dakota for no return on that investment at all, just so a few rich people can get a little richer at the expense of our property rights. And why would we appropriate money for AOC's Green New Boondoggle deal? But that's happening, and we've got defenders of it, and they're out of the upper Midwest because the dangling dollar causes them to say things that they otherwise don't believe. To quote Art Laffer, the great economist of the Laffer curve under Reagan, he would say of these people, like the folks that are advocating for this, They are rebutting arguments that they know to be true to curry political favor with their political backers, is what amounts to. If it comes to me, I'll try to say it right the next time. It hasn't been in my brain a long time.
I'll pull it up and include it in the show notes.
But, yeah, do that. Get me straight. I fumbled.
Well, you know, this show has gone way too fast and we only have a few minutes left, but you bring to mind the ones that will just say whatever they need to do in order to please their backers. And some of those folks look like Radstetter rhinos, Radstetter Republicans. Now, mm-hmm. In Iowa, you guys have made some great strides in this legislative session to shore up some private property rights. Can you tell me a little bit about what that battle looks like? I know my listeners have really paid attention to the South Dakota victories, but what happened in Iowa? What did that look like?
Well, it started November 12th in Fort Dodge, where Free Soil Foundations, our lobbying firm, the Land of the Free Action, called a meeting. Graciously, we had Mark Lapka and Carla Lems came in from South Dakota. We had senators and representatives there, and most of our board of directors were there as well. We put some 30 or 32 ideas out on the table to push through the legislature. Mark and Carla, they were so good. They were engaged in all of it, but they pretty much said in the nicest way possible, thank you very much. We think we're going to go home and just pass our ban on eminent domain for CO2 pipelines. And I remember that time, and it was just brilliant, and they knew exactly where to go. Well, we didn't have that clarity in Iowa. We didn't think we could get that far. So all those bills got synthesized down to 6 or 7 or 8. All but one of them were packed into this bill, House File 639. But the one that would have made South Dakota proud, the one that mirrored it, that passed off the floor of the House, was killed immediately in the Senate and the Commerce Committee. But the other bill, 639, that does some things like insurance and some other restrictions like that, which does a decent job of restricting this, it was brought up on the Commerce Committee by Mike Busolo, who used to work for Bruce Rastetter, but he's never told us when he got his last paycheck or when he'll get it. Yeah, you got that innuendo, didn't you? And
yes, then, no. Well, it was pretty obvious listening to him speak on the floor who his masters were.
Yes. And so I think he thought that he could take our big, beautiful bill, House File 639 in the state of Iowa, and amend that to please Bruce Rastetter. And he actually tried to do that. The big battle engaged. And the thing that needs to be said here is that 12 state senators bonded together. I called them the Dauntless Dozen. And they said there'll be no appropriations bill come out of this Senate unless and until our bill gets a vote on the floor. So their per diem ran out. So now they're all out of their own pockets down there in Des Moines, and they're all anxious to go home. The Dauntless Dozen held together, all 12 of them, up till just the last moment. And then we went to 11, but we still had enough. And this time we had 11 Republicans out of the 34, 35 Republican senators voted with us on House File 639, and 16 Democrats voted with us. So for the first time in a long, long time, a majority of the minority passed a bill, but it was on constitutional right to property. And there was, you saw it, a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth. They drug the Dauntless Dozen into the Senate Republican caucus and beat on them for 2 or 3 hours at a time. There was on Friday morning, there was a memo that came out from, nobody will tell me where, so I'm going to say it's Bruce Rastetter's lawyers for want of an honest answer. And that went into the hands of 20 or so Republicans. All of them were for the pipeline and wanted to oppose our constitutional rights. And so they took turns beating on, verbally criticizing, and challenging the intelligence and the character and the patriotism of the Dauntless Dozen who sat there and took it. And they held together. And so we got 639 passed off the floor after 2 long days of wrangling and well into the night. And now that sits on Governor Reynolds' desk, and she has until June 15th to decide whether to sign it or veto it. And now there's a lot of lobbying going on. She's opened her door to people who want to protect property rights in their first week or two, but it looks to me like Summit is going to have free access in the last few days until that decision is made. I'm not optimistic. I think it's 60-40 that she vetoes the bill, and then we have to go to court. We've already filed the lawsuit.
Wow. Wow. Well, we weren't sure about how 1052 is going to fare once it lands on the governor's desk, but I just have to commend the elected officials, the legislators who stuck to their guns and said, do or die, this bill is going to the desk. So congratulations to Iowa on the perseverance and the commitment to the people. I know you know, as much as there was the gnashing of the teeth, what I also saw were there were prayerful people in Iowa that were just there on the ground fighting the fight and keeping the faith and not wavering in the resolve. And that's what it's going to take, is a constant diligence. So, Steve, I guess any closing thoughts? I'm going to share that article that you mentioned in the show notes as well. But any parting words of advice for folks as we get activated and start pressuring the Senate on this big, beautiful bill?
Well, I think start in the Senate with a person you think is most key and work around that. But there's two good constitutionalists there that I recommend you make an effort to go see them or their staff. And that's Mike Lee and Ted Cruz. They are true believers in the Constitution. They understand it with clarity. Ted Cruz has written for the Supreme Court, and Mike Lee has just been a leader. And I know both those fellows, and in their soul, they're solid. Ron Johnson sounds like he's the lead on this. I would ask him, who else is leading? Find out who is around that circle so you can empower them and expand that circle. Enough of that going on that can make a difference. And I hope they go to the floor during the debate of this bill or any other time, and they give speeches against what they tried to do in the House of Representatives. And I hope they poke their finger at the guy that I think is behind this, which is Doug Burgum. And I hope it echoes back to the President of the United States. And by the way, the President listens more to the Senate than he does the House, I think, and individual senators anyway. So when a speech is made on the floor and it challenges the president or the cabinet member, it gets back to them. I'd ask them, be vocal on this. We've got to push this back because that camel's nose almost got under the tent on this one, and we cannot let that happen.
Well, again, Free Soil Foundation is the organization you want to follow for all the updates on this. And I just want to thank you so much for the time and for your love of this country, your dedication to this. And one day, Steve, I've just mark my words, we're going to be standing on the steps at the Supreme Court celebrating the overturning of the Kelo decision. So I think it's going to happen in our lifetime because you're committed to it, I'm committed to it, and so many others are as well.
And the next thing we do from there is we go to the grave of Justice Scalia and say a prayer there. He's the That's man right. that predicted it. Thanks so
Amen.
Much, Amanda.
Amen. Thank you. We'll hope to see you soon.
While I've got you here, I would love to invite you to check out my website, AmandaRadke.com. Each week, I share my column, this podcast, and new items to shop for farm and ranch families, including my children's books that celebrate agriculture. Use code DUSTYTRAIL to save 15% on your next purchase. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting my small business and for your continued support in keeping me on the road fighting for farm and ranch families. I'm thankful to each and every one of you who tune into this show each week. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review to let me know how you're liking the content and our guests. Until the next time we meet on the Dusty Trail, I'm Amanda Radke, and this is the heart of rural America.